Friends, as real yoga is but the application and power of the metaphysical and philosophical ideas presented to us in theosophy as fundamental principles, it would be good for us to begin this morning's consideration on Hatha and Raja Yoga with a recap of a few of those basic ideas. Now, the first idea to consider is that of universal unity and causation. For there to be universal unity and causation, there must be one eternal, all-inclusive source without beginning or end from which everything comes and because of which everything is interconnected. We might say that that spiritual, if you will, source is the higher or the highest principle, the highest self in each and every human being. And that because of this underlying unity on all the planes and all the departments of nature, universal unity is a fact of nature. Everywhere there is interdependence and inner connection. As this universe comes forth from this eternal unity in manifestation, there is a sevenfold differentiation of the universe, the worlds, and every human being. So the human being in its complete nature is a mirror, a sevenfold mirror of the sevenfold manifested universe. And therefore, all the creative powers and forces and substances and principles we see in great nature are present in us. And so, in our human nature, we are indissolubly connected with all other beings and with great nature itself. The second idea to keep in mind is that of the universality of cycles and its extension idea of reincarnation, re-embodiment. Because one of the principal philosophical ideas is that of the existence of an independent, evolving soul. And we might say this is our true nature as soul beings, independent, preceding, and continuing to exist after the body. And the evolutionary progress of that soul is through an unending cycle of incarnations, in a different personality, in a different form. But all of these expressions, all of these conditions in which the continuing egg soul finds itself are the re karmic results, the results of causes set up by that being individually and in combination with others, either in this life or a previous life. And all that we will experience in the future as conditions within ourselves and with others is a result of the causes we set up in this life. The third idea to consider is that of evolution, or what we might call the continuing unfoldment and perfectibility of the human being and all of nature. So all souls are fundamentally identical in their primordial essence with the universal oversoul, and we might say the purpose of our evolution is to gain self-conscious awareness of that unity with the source of all, and to raise our consciousness and substance and the beings around us to that same condition of perfectibility, of wisdom, knowledge, and expression. Now, for the human being in our stage, being self-conscious thinkers, possessed of free will and choice, the capacity for free will and choice. This is a self-induced and self-devised effort. So, having said that, let's begin to look at Hatha and Raja Yoga. And as everything before it differentiates is a fundamental unity or oneness, let's begin at looking at the commonalities between these two branches of yoga. So, as we have them expressed, Hatha and Raja, these are Sanskrit terms. So, they are Eastern systems of attaining yoga, or as we said, self-conscious union with one's higher self. And in Sanskrit, that's called Atman. So, another commonality is all these systems have many and varying methods of developing the inner psychic and spiritual faculties and powers to achieve this self-conscious union or awakening of higher states of consciousness, so that we may perceive them as mind beings. And a third commonality is that such union, self-conscious union, is possible for each and every human being, as we are fundamentally mind beings, souls, egos in evolution. And such a human being in this terminology is called a yogi. So now let's begin to differentiate. And now we'll look at first at Hatha Yoga, keeping in mind, like everything else in nature, we can speak of Hatha Yoga as distinct from Raja Yoga, but even within Hatha Yoga, there are many differentiations and shades of practice. So, underlying all these systems of Hatha Yoga, there is an attempt to seek union and balancing of the energies in the body by the disciplined and determined, consistent application of force that is used by physical techniques such as postures, exercises, and control of the breath. The very term Hatha comes from two Sanskrit terms, ha, standing for the sun or solar energies, and tha, or the moon or the lunar energies, the opposite forces. And as these forces can get out of balance, the attempt is made in Hatha Yoga, as we said, to balance the opposite energies. And all the ex hope phenomena of physical, mental well-being, psychic well-being, and even spiritual well-being are thought in the Hatha Yoga systems to the be to the balancing in the physical nature by using these forces. Now, from the perspective of the theosophical principles we've heard regarding the human being, the development of Hatha Yoga systems is primarily external, physical, psychical, physiological, and psychic, and it relates to those four lower principles we spoke of the sevenfold differentiation of the human being, those that relate to our temporary personality that has expression in one life but changes from life to life. It does not relate to the immortal reincarnating ego, which is threefold. You say spirit, soul, and mind, to use very general English terms. So, its results are the development of psychic faculties and powers and psychophysiological faculties and powers at the expense of the development of the mental and spiritual faculties of the immortal ego. So, our ego has powers, spiritual, higher psychic, and mental, which are potentially very potent, but they are ignored or not developed in these systems of Hatha Yoga. The results, and we acknowledge the results on those lower planes, are temporary. They last for only one life, during the life of that particular combination of personal tendencies. But even though those results last for one life, there is an enduring disposition for and results of those psychic tendencies that are carried forth from life to life, so that the incarnating soul in a future life may find those psychic expressions, those powers, but not know where they come from or how to control them. The discipline is lost, but the tendency remains. And so, because of this, over time, with this development of the lower psychic energies and affinities, there is a weakening of the higher mental faculties and their influence on the lower. So the very attempt to try to maintain balance by providing it exclusively to our physical nature ignores the spiritual and creates its own imbalance. And if continued through many lives or a series of lives, like any other imbalance, it can be productive of dis-ease or imbalance in our physical system, resulting in illness, in our psychological system, involving emotional problems, and also it can leave us to a psychic sensitivity or mediumship, which is uncontrolled. Because the discipline has been lost, but the tendencies are still there. And so over time, there is a further weakening of the influence of the higher on the lower. So while theosophy acknowledges the results and abilities of the Hatha Yoga, it also would state that to pursue that path alone, without the benefits of Raja Yoga, can be unsafe and dangerous for most people. And so, throughout the ages, especially in the East, we find that there is that expression of Raja Yoga, which, when you break it down into Sanskrit terms, literally means the royal yoga, the kingly yoga, the highest form of union with the Supreme. So Raja Yoga then seeks union with the higher self through the development of the higher psychic, mental, and spiritual powers through the exercise, regulation, and concentration of thought. Now, that definition is right from HPB's Theosophical Glossary on Raja Yoga. So it is the practical, as we said at the very beginning, Raja Yoga is the practical application of the power of metaphysical and philosophical truths throughout our whole nature and in everyday life. As distinguished from Hatha Yoga, Raja Yoga is an internal process rather than an external or physical process. It does not require any special physical location to be practiced, nor any special physical asceticism. It can be practiced anywhere, anytime, by any human being in any condition. So we might say, and summarizing, it is spiritual and mental rather than psychic and physical. So it is the inner development of the powers of the immortal ego, the thinker, which is emphasized in Raja Yoga, hence its results having to do with our true inner immortal nature endure and are carried from life to life as consistent prevailing tendencies of spirituality and the highest aspirations. That becomes part of our enduring character. So once again, Raja Yoga, to break it down very simply, deals with the sustaining, regulation adjustment, and conscious focusing our conscious awareness rather than physical regulation of the body and breathing, and body and breathing through postures and exercises. So, in the course of time, because of the exercise of our higher spiritual faculties, the Raja Yoga develops the same balance and control and expression of the psychic powers, the psychophysiological powers of the Hatha Yogi, but much more safely and much more completely and much more in balance with all of life. So, from this, we'd like to move to a consideration of the various expressions of Raja Yoga that we find throughout the world and in theosophical literature. And once again, there are many different schools and methods of it. We're just going to look at a few to get our perspective. But most of us are perhaps familiar, because we have on our book table for sale Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. Well, Patanjali was a great sage. He lived approximately 2,400 years ago, according to which authority you're going to follow, but in that time frame. And he was the founder of the Yoga school of Hindu philosophy, one of the six darshanas or schools of Hindu philosophy. And he composed the Yoga Sutras, which are four short chapters, which we have interpreted for us in the Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms, which was collated for us by William Q. Judge. It doesn't actually mention or use the term in that text of Raja Yoga. Yet his system, the eightfold or the eight-limbed system of yoga, is called by others Raja Yoga because of its emphasis on the mind. As a matter of fact, he begins his text with the idea that yoga is control of the dispersive tendencies of the mind, bringing the mind back into the control of itself and its instrument. The second example we see of Raja Yoga in the literature is that of Shankaracharya. Now, he was also a great Hindu sage. He was the founder of the Advaita Vedanta school, the Vedanta being another one of those main philosophical schools of the Hindus. He lived about 1,200 years ago, around 800 AD, depending on who you're going to follow. And he developed a 15-fold system of Raja Yoga, which pretty much incorporates and expands on Patanjali's system. But the interesting point there is, in his commentary on Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga, he says that the mention of control of the breath and postures is purely symbolical and not meant to be taken literally or physically. And we'll get more into that this morning. Now, a third expression, we find this in the Secret Doctrine, is mention of the Taraka Raja Yoga system, which is a Brahmanical Raja Yoga system, which is very practical. And we see that in its understanding of human nature, it pretty much incorporates the sevenfold nature expressed in the Theosophical teachings. And we also find an even more ancient sage, who precedes Patanjali, called Yajna Valkyra, and he taught a system of yoga that was said to be helpful to prepare the world for the teaching of Buddha. So the point here is, we look back, we see that Raja Yoga, in its true nature, in its complete nature, is a synthesis of all these systems And also that it is neither Eastern or Western, it's neither ancient or modern. In fact, there is evidence of a system of yoga that not only precedes Patanjali, it precedes the Vedas, it precedes the Hindus. So what evidence do we have of this universal, eternal, all-inclusive system of Raja Yoga? And we can look right at the beginning of the text we had read this morning from the Voice of the Silence. And in that introduction to that book, HPB says that fragments, these verses, come from the same ancient archaic sources as the stanzas of the Book of Zan, upon which the secret doctrine is based. So the practical application of the teachings, as well as the teachings themselves, goes back to that very ancient archaic source. She also says that the teachings given within that book, The Voice of the Silence, are the system of the higher psychic and spiritual development and union of the higher self given out in the Trans-Himalayan esoteric school of the Mahatmas and the Adepts. And as we know, that school transcends, precedes, inclusive of all great systems. This is one of the what we have in the Voice of the Silence is as much, she says, as we can benefit in our current system in the application of this higher psychic and spiritual development. She also goes on to say in a footnote on page 79 that every stage of Raja Yoga is symbolized by a geometrical figure. Once more, evidence offered by HPB that there is a higher type of a more universal type of yoga. We want to just take a brief moment here to look at some other sources that confirm this idea to us in the theosophical literature we have available through the writings of HPB and William Q. Judge. Now, she says in The Secret Doctrine that every true adept is by definition a Raja Yoga. And also, she says that every adept or Raja Yogi is the custodian of the seeds of the hidden possibilities of nature and master and guide of her undiscovered potentialities, one who awakens and arouses them into activity. So the highest Raja Yoga is not only a state of mental abstraction or union with self, it's knowledge and power and wisdom and the ability to use all these higher and lower powers in nature for the benefit of the purpose of evolution. And so it's not for self that these faculties are acquired, but to help on the evolution of all conscious beings towards the realization of that one goal, our unity with one common source, our self-conscious unity. So true occultism, then, our knowledge of these hidden forces is genuine Raja Yoga powers, HPB tells us. She also goes on to say, theosophy is synonymous with the source of the true Raja Yogis, with the science of the true Raja Yogis. So we're getting here a picture that Raja Yoga is on a spectrum, is a spectrum, ranging from the most practical, everyday, daily psychology at one end to the highest, purest practical occultisms and powers of an adept at the other. And in our Wednesday evening class on the ocean, we're going to get a peek into an understanding of the powers of the adept. And interestingly enough, this coming Friday, looking at psychic and noetic action, we're going to see what happens to the when those uncontrolled powers of the lower nature tending towards psychism and mediumship take over and control the individual, the dangers therein. So for us, though, this morning, we want to get a handle on how this system, what are the initial stages that can be helpful for us of this true Raja Yoga system, which we said is neither Eastern or Western, ancient or modern, but is useful for us now as average human beings. And by that, we mean a human being with a physical, healthy physical body, a functioning physical body, a certain degree of psychic sensitivity, because if we did not had that, we could not communicate or be empathetic with any other human being, of varying degrees of passions and desires and aspirations and feelings, ability to reason and use our mind, and even flashes of insight, intuition, and higher aspirations. This entire bundle is what we call the average state of humanity at this time, our human race, with the desire principle, unfortunately, being still the most predominant principle in our nature. But bit by bit, we see the mind, the awareness of our consciousness as mind beings, beginning to take more and more hold. So the three basic ideas for Raja Yoga at our stage is to live one's daily life in a concentrated, self-controlled, calm, and conscious way. To live from the highest point of conscious awareness we can imagine and manage to maintain. There's the self-induced and self-devised effort. Real Raja Yoga is indissolubly wedded with the ideal of compassion, altruism, self-sacrifice, and renunciation for the benefit and interests of others. So the goal of Raja Yoga, real Raja Yoga, is not individual self-absorption in some nirvanic state, but to acquire that complete knowledge so that we can take it and use it for the benefit of lifting up life and all beings and fellow human beings around us. So, in terms of the practice, even of this everyday yoga that we can do at this point, we understand that it has to do with our inner being, the plane of our thought and feeling and actions in words and deeds. This is where we begin. So, even though we acknowledge the existence and we study the unexplained and occult forces in man and nature, those old psychic powers, we study to understand them, but we don't pursue them because they are not valuable. In the pursuit of spiritual knowledge. And once again, to have these powers without the knowledge and ability to control them is a disadvantage, an obstacle, and even dangerous. So, what do we need to take away this morning in order to begin on this preliminary path of Raj Yoga, which we all, in some degree, can benefit from, even if it's in terms of having better human relationships, more calm, clarity of thinking, know how to help others, resolve conflicts better, achieve our fullest potential. What principles can we gather from it? And that is that everything has its origin in the mind. Everything, every action has its origin in the mind. And that being the case, we can have no attachment for what we do not think about. If we are constantly think about our personalities in everyday life and personal and physical experiences and relationships, that's what we're bound and attached to. That's what we imprison ourselves. If we think about our spiritual nature and the spiritual nature of others, that's what we become attached to. So if we want to rise above the confines, the binds of our lower nature into our spiritual, we have to fix our thought on the highest ideal and its practical expression. So we have to constantly strive in our minds to rise up to that level, that highest ideal that we can imagine. That's the self-induced and self-devised effort. So notice in their system, this system, there's no one method laid out for every human being because we're all in different states. But where we are, we can all use the same principles of striving to rise in our minds to the highest ideal. So this is the first step. The first step then is to understand the meaning of universal brotherhood, because that's the highest ideal that we should consider in terms of Raja Yoga, not our own spiritual evolution and ending up in nirvana, but the universal brotherhood of humanity, the universal brotherhood and interconnectedness of all life. So this requires a purity of our heart and motive to live up to that ideal, because it's the impurities that are there karmically and through the influence of the world we live in that need to be removed. They're like obstacles that pull us down, get us stuck in the mud or stuck in the weeds, so we cannot rise up. So we, once again, we always need to watch our mind and always be consciously aware of that ideal and motive of universal brotherhood. If we find ourselves becoming conscious of something else, we need to recognize that and bring it back to the ideal of and the desire for universal brotherhood. To always be focused on that ideal and motive. And what that means is if we find ourselves being distracted and focused on other things, to bring it back to the ideal and focusing on universal brotherhood. It doesn't mean we should neglect our duties to others, but to perform them with this understanding and highest motive of universal brotherhood for all beings as a guiding principle. And always be striving to raise our thought and mind and feeling to that level. Acknowledging that we have aspects of our personal nature which don't live up to it, we then determine through our self-induced and self-devised effort to elevate our minds. That is the Raja Yoga of mind that we can all benefit. But we are physical beings in, as well, and we live in a physical world and we have physical relationships. So we have natural duties to others. And these duties, if performed, we're told by Mr. Judge, these duties, if performed selflessly and persistently followed, this is the highest kind of yoga. If you can no more do, if you can do no more than your duty to friend and foe, to family, to kin, to stranger, to all human beings, if you can no more than do your duty, it will bring you to the goal. It will prepare you for the next step. So, what do we do with this principle of desire that's so strong in our nature right now? How do we elevate it? First, whatever you can do, strengthen the desire for knowing the truth. Your desire for knowing your truth, this will increase your will to know the truth. Now that's different. For some people, it's knowing the truth is what they can gain in discourse and communication with other human beings. For another human being, it's what they can know of truth is what they see in themselves. For another, it might be what they can study in books or learn from lectures. But whatever it is, it should be guided but by your desire for truth. The next desire you want to try to strengthen is your desire to act for the whole human race and the higher self in each human being. And so it's not only the desire for truth, but what are we going to do with that truth? And that is to put it to the benefit of all of humanity and also each and every human being, not for humanity in general, but for our neighbor, our friend, to recognize the higher self in them, even though they do not recognize themselves. But with that, try to increase our desire to act for them and benefit them. And sometimes we cannot do that because they have their own obstacles. But at least in terms of our relationships, our smile, our willingness to listen, our willingness to empathize and to understand, even that is an expression of that desire. And finally, we want to try to increase that desire to live each day in harmony with the higher self, the self of all, to see ourselves as part of this great universe and great nature and every other being, and try as much we can to live in harmony. And if we do that, we'll see that this life of ours is a great school, many opportunities, many things we've already can do, and many things yet we have to do. But if we do that gradually, disciplining our thought, our desire, our performance, and dutiful actions, if we do this, this personal idea of separateness, this self-identification with our personality and outer self will weaken. The cause of all our selfishness and harming of others will gradually weaken because it is that lower self and its tendencies, its identifications, its feeling of separateness, which interferes with the action and power of the higher self within on this plane. Now, the lower personality is important. It's a vital tool. Seek out the Raja of the senses. That's our lower mind, our personalities. But let the disciple, the thinker, the soul, slay or control the slayer. So we have this wonderful tool, this wonderful instrument, our mind, our feelings, our senses, our body. Let's now discipline it and begin that path of true Raja Yoga. And these initial steps of self-purification, of compassion, altruism, these are all the first steps. And as a matter of fact, as we do that, we begin to develop a true kind of concentration and meditation. Of course, we'll have more of that next Sunday when we'll really be talking more about concentration and meditation. And anybody who's interested in the true discipline of Raja Yoga will want to get an understanding of that. So we're going to stop here in this formal presentation and give you an opportunity to ask questions or express your comments, thoughts, and experiences regarding this subject of Hatha and Raja Yoga.
Yes, go ahead.
So we're told that there's no royal road to truth. If there's no royal road to truth, are we at risk of bypassing the basic steps to essentially construct the roof before we lay the foundation?
Well, in the idea is in terms of well, there's several concepts there. The royal road to truth. Now, does it exist or does it not exist? Well, if we take the ideas expressed to us by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he does speak of a royal or a kingly knowledge and the kingly mystery. And one who pursues this is free of danger. And one who practices it is free of danger, and it does lead to results in time. As far as the royal talisman or charm, or that is better than any posture or breathing practice, Judge tells us that it is duty. Now, we need to lay a foundation to jump right into Tantra yoga practices or Kundalini practices or breath control pranayama practices before gaining this fundamental control of our nature can be dangerous. Not because the results don't come, because the results come and we are not prepared to handle them. So, as Shankaracharya tells us, the real breath control is the control of the intermental breath, just like the universe breathes out and returns. Our minds breathe out and reach out and extend out into the world around us and identify them. And then we have to breathe in, we have to draw the mind back to the self, to detach from that outer and refix itself on its true nature. So there's a constant going forth and returning of the mind. That's the true inner mental breath of Raja Yoga. And then we have the posturing. It's the maintaining of that attitude of impersonality, of detachment, of spiritual identity, maintaining that posture through discipline and focus and concentration and meditation that we have to develop. And if we do that, we begin to not only have more control of our lower, our own personal nature, but all these lower forces of nature which are awakened in us through the other forms of yoga. Now, in the chat, we do have mention of other kinds of yoga. We might mention in the Bhagavad Gita, we have several kinds of yoga. We have a bhakti yoga or a yoga of love, of devotion. We have a karma yoga, a yoga of action, and we have a jnana yoga, which is a yoga of knowledge, meaning that we need action, knowledge, and devotion to attain to yoga. And as a matter of fact, every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is a different kind of devotion or yoga. But all these three are incorporated or but individualized expressions of the one complete system of Raja Yoga, which we said is not to be found in any one book, but is the source of all those wise books. It's not to be found in the East or West or in one teacher or another, or one savior or another, but is the message of all great teachers down through the ages. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Are there any aspects of Hatha Yoga which can be practiced without harm now before we master Raja Yoga, which we think probably takes many lifetimes?
Well, if we talk about regulation of the body functions for balance, we can follow the principles taught to us by Buddha and Krishna and exert moderation in our activity and in our rest, not to stay up too late to exhaust ourselves or rise too early. We need a proper amount of rest. We need to follow that appropriate cycle of activity and rest. So that's an application. Moderate of exertion in all things, in our exercise, in our discipline of exercise, in our diet, not to eat too much or too little, to sleep too much or too little. So we can exercise that type of bodily control and physiological control. But when it comes to breathing exercises, pranayama, these are specific exercises that are done in the Hatha Yoga system to awaken certain forces and powers in nature and centers in our nature. And as we said, they can be very dangerous for one who does not have the control. I mean, you can give any instrument, you can give a scalpel to a surgeon, and he could save a life. You give that same scalpel to a baby, and most likely it will be destructive. I hope not. Could be. So there's the principle. You don't want to give forces that are very powerful, much more powerful than our physical forces, because our physical forces are limited in terms of their extension of influence in time and space. The psychic and spiritual forces do not have those limitations. So they're much more powerful and their effect lasts much longer. So when it comes to breathing, Judge tells us that. Certainly, when we're anxious, when we're excited, when we're angry, our breathing is affected, tends to become more rapid and shallow. So it always is helpful for control of our mental attitude and our physical well-being to just be conscious of our breath and breathe normally, deep breaths in, deep breaths out, not to breathe too fast or too shallow, and just develop the habit of general awareness of Just the calm in breathing and out breathing will very often help regulate the emotional state. This is not the same as the suppression and control of the breath as prescribed in certain pranayamic yoga practices. Another thought. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
If we're cautioned against hatha yoga as being too dangerous, how do we know that the practice itself doesn't incorporate aspects of Raja Yoga? And how do we test, check, and verify that without harming ourselves potentially?
Well, you have to go to the text. How do we know? Well, go to the sources. Go read the sources, the so-called authorities in yogas, what they put out, and they will tell you what the Hatha yoga system involves. Don't check, test, and verify everything, and look to the kinds of disciplines and exercises and expectations that they have, and search. Once having understood what Raja yoga involves in terms of the mind control, once becoming familiar with Raja Yoga as we have it in books like The Voice of the Silence and the Bhagavad Gita, Light on the Path. Light on the Path is a very good devotional book. It was written specifically for individuals who come into this life with psychic powers from the past, but don't know how to handle it, how to develop the control. So we have those devotional books which are specifically directed to Raja Yoga. Compare and contrast, put them side to side, make an individual study and see for yourself, compared to what these authorities or yogis in the Hatha Yoga system teach, compared to the other, and then make your own judgment. So check, test, and verify what Theosophy tells you in base of your own research, keeping in mind that your main desire there is the search for truth. And your main desire in the search for truth is in order to put that knowledge to the benefit of others, not just for one's own advancement. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
So in the Voice of the Silence, there's three halls. The first is ignorance, and the second one is knowledge. Would that be jnana yoga? Would that be the equivalent of the second hall that's spoken of in the Voice of the Silence?
Well, as we recall, the three halls are the hall of ignorance, the hall of learning or probationary learning, and the hall of wisdom. And we're told that the one who passes through the first hall does not mistake the fires of lust that burn within as the light of spiritual wisdom. So one experiences the passions and desires and sensations, but does not confuse that with what is really spiritual knowledge and illumination. Then the second hall relates to the experiences of our psychic nature, which can be wide and varied. The Voice of the Silence spoke of the dangers of the lower iddhi or the lower psychic powers. And this could go anywhere from our normal everyday feelings and emotions and passions to the expression of clairvoyance, clairaudience, psychic sensitivity, mediumship, hypnotic suggestion, so forth, all the things we've talked about during the year at one point or another. And when we do that, the awakening of those faculties arouses certain sensations, certain impressions, sensations. Some of them are real, some of them are distorted, some like hallucinations and delusions we know are completely irrelevant and misleading and confusing, and all those things. So there's a certain danger there. Although the experiences open us up to a world beyond the physical, there's a serpent behind each flower, the serpent of psychic temptation. And so it says the true devotee passes beyond it, doesn't get confused, but searches for that within themselves, which is also found in the hall of wisdom. That means that hall of wisdom, the spiritual truth, exists there, but it also exists in us. We are a ray. We are not separate from universal wisdom. It's within us. It's within us by our potentiality of being one with the universal oversoul. It's within us because it's been impressed in our very nature from the beginning of our evolutionary journey on this planet as self-conscious thinkers by those who are wiser and had learned them before. They made those impressions on us, just as a parent will try to pass on to their children certain ethical, moral principles, things they need to know before they get to kindergarten about how to get along with other human beings. And so it's not in our nature, and we can search for that in ourselves, and what we find there is the same as that universal wisdom. So that middle stage, we might say that Hatha Yoga gets us into, and all the subtexts and all the subtleties and all the potencies of that middle hall, the hall of probationary learning, but it does not get us into the hall of spiritual wisdom. It may open us up to the sensation and impression that there are higher states of consciousness, but it's the terms of self-conscious realization of those states, all their interconnections with every department of nature, all the powers and potencies and essences that interact there and interact with our own nature, how we can awaken those and use those beneficially. That's not available in Hatha Yoga. And if you go check it out for yourself and see it. You put that out there, but prove it to yourself. Another question, comment. So we did mention that this Wednesday, we're considering the power of the adept. And we think of that, every adept or Raj Yoga has to be a true theosophist. But not all true theosophists are adepts. We here regard as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity, regardless of their race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And by condition, we mean not only their physical condition, but their psychic condition, their mental condition, their moral condition, whatever. They're all brothers and sisters in this effort, okay? So, but they're trying, they feel that aspiration to be of service to others. That's the true theosophist, who is devoted to that ideal in spite of the shortcomings they see in themselves and in humanity around them. So we strive to be true theosophists first as a prerequisite. And if we could accomplish that in any one life or series of lives, we set the stage for when, under law, we will be able to naturally enter these higher stages of Raja Yoga development, of occult development, of adeptship, whatever, and become better able to help and teach others. But we have to begin where we are right now. And that's very important because it's not just about ourselves, it's about all everybody else around us. And if you ever think that you've reached as much as you can in this one life, we hope you don't, but if you ever do, then just look around and see how much work you have to do in this life for others. So, with that, we'll come to bring our meeting to a close at this time and make it a good Memorial Day weekend.